This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson and welcome to this week's show of Property Matters. You're listening to Property Matters here on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o Ngā Tangata o Manawatu. Again, I'm Greg Watson. In this show, we talk about all things property, or at least as much as we can squeeze into this half-hour time slot. So let's look at some of the news. There's been a bit happening in the news lately, and to do with what's happening with inflation, what might be happening with interest rates on housing and so forth. And so we'll just have a little start with that and then see how we go. So this article from July 17th by Tom Pulistrecker in stuff.co.nz says, hopes of early interest rate cut rise slightly as inflation falls to 3.3%. So annual inflation has dropped to 3.3% in the 3 months to the end of June, down from 4% in the previous quarter, Stats NZ has reported. Stats NZ senior manager Nicola Groudon said inflation had now fallen to levels seen about 3 years ago, though she noted it was still above the top of the Reserve Bank's 1% to 3% target band. Westpac chief economist Kelly Eckhold said the figures probably made an earlier interest rate cut from the Reserve Bank marginally more likely, though not unequivocally so. Kiwi Bank, which has been forecasting a rate cut in November, said prospects for an even earlier cut were rising, while ASB senior economist Mark Smith said underlying price pressures were cooling rapidly, and ANZ described the figures as reassuring. Domestic inflation had been slower to cool, but this is partly reflective of cost-driven influences that monetary policy should seek to look through. Finance Minister Nicola Willis said the drop in the inflation represented progress in economic recovery and showed the government was turning the economy around. When the interest rates begin to fall, it will give New Zealanders real cost of living relief and allow our economy to kick back into gear. Oh boy, am I looking forward to that one. But Green Party housing spokesperson Tamitha Paul said the detailed data showed the everyday struggle for renters is worse than ever. I'll talk about that shortly, but that's really down to supply and demand. So let's see what effect this might have. The different banks have said a number of different things. I know at least one of the banks has already changed their mortgage rates. So an article that came out on the same day by Esther Taunton said, what to do with your mortgage now? It says more borrowers are choosing to fix their mortgages for a year or less as the Reserve Bank changes its tune on the possibility of reducing interest rates. The Reserve Bank of New Zealand held the OCR at 5.5% after last week's review, but hinted at interest rates being reduced if inflation pressures continue to decline. Kelvin Davidson, CoreLogic chief property economist, said with the Reserve Bank of New Zealand's change of tone, there could be some light emerging at the end of the mortgage rate tunnel. Rates would not fall straight away or particularly quickly, but borrowers could welcome any drops. To be fair, there's already been a drift lower for rates in the past few months, but OCR cuts will clearly add some impetus. Westpac was the first bank to react to the Reserve Bank's more optimistic outlook, taking less than 24 hours to announce cuts to interest rates on its 6, 12 and 18-month home loan terms. The decreases included a 25 basis point drop on the 12-month rate to 6.89%, making it one of the lowest one-year rates and an attractive option for the increasing number of borrowers looking for a short-term fix. David Cunningham, Squirrel Mortgage's chief squirrel, said it had been well signalled that interest rates would fall and most customers were either taking 6 or 12-month terms. The Reserve Bank of New Zealand's latest economic forecast, that is the one in May, was for it to be at least a year until the OCR would be reduced, but most economists are now picking this in November or earlier. The Reserve Bank of New Zealand staff softened stance softened last week in light of very weak economic indicators, which gave most economists confidence that the OCR cuts are likely this year or February at the latest. So customer choice to go short is consistent with all those signals. The article goes on into more detail from there, but effectively they're saying possibly don't fix for too long and just see where things are again in 6 or 12 months. In this article that's come out today relative to the time of recording, which is July 19th, follows on from that and says, what are NZ banks planning to do with interest rates? And this reiterates that borrowers could be in a much more comfortable position by this time next year, with banks tipping mortgage rates to fall by up to 2% over the next 2 months. But when and how dramatically rates fall depends on what the Reserve Bank of New Zealand does with its official cash rate. So the OCR actually drives the rate banks pay when they borrow from the central bank and is the main influence on the mortgage and deposit rates. So let's go back to that earlier statement that mortgage rates to fall by up to 2%. Now that's really significant in terms of what that would do to the pockets of many New Zealanders and put more money in their pockets and help with their cost of living aspect. So that's really fantastic. It does say that with those 2% rates that they will make make quite a considerable difference to many New Zealand households, particularly those who have recently been, in the last few years, been affected by those rising rates and if they're maybe just hanging in there, changes will make a genuine approach there. So I believe, without sounding political, the government seems to be doing a reasonable job of getting those the inflation down, which again can reduce those home loan mortgage rates, which can create more money into the pockets of Kiwis, which can then help with the economy. So there we go. It's all swings and roundabouts. Now, everyone loves a dramatic headline every now and then. This one by Susan Edmonds of July 19th for Radio New Zealand says, property investors rake in $500 billion over 30 years. So New Zealand property investors have made $511 billion since 1991, one economist has estimated. Ed McKnight of Opie's Partners calculated the gains by using the Reserve Bank's estimated value of housing stock, adjusted by Stats NZ's home ownership rates. Over the last 30 years, the combined value of New Zealand residential property increased by $1.5 trillion, of which investors benefited from about a third. McKnight said it was likely to be similar to Australia's experience of the past few decades. Property values have increased at a similar rate over the long term and have a similar rate of home ownership and investing, but would likely be higher than the UK and USA. These countries, or those countries that have a similar home ownership and renter rate, but house prices haven't gone up so quickly, so less wealth would have been generated compared to New Zealand. He said, well, that was a rough estimate. It would give a sense of the scale of wealth that had been created by long-term property investment. Safe to say it's in the multi-hundreds of billions. Now, I'm a great fan of property as a form of long-term investment. Not so much the short-term, but long-term. So setting goals, working towards it, property has performed very well in the past, as this article talks about. Nick Goodall, the head of research at CoreLogic, said the fact that values had increased so much over 33 years was staggering. That a third of that has been enjoyed by investors is not necessarily a surprise, but certainly another way of illustrating the exceptional growth of the property market over that time, and that investors have been a key part of that. Miles Workman, a senior economist at ANZ, said property was popular with New Zealand investors because it was easy to understand, and there had been a structural trend towards lower interest rates that had been associated with a trend higher in house prices. So if you got into the property market at the right time in history, it's been well publicised that people did pretty well out of that. The big question is whether it's still appropriate to assume those kinds of price rises can persist. So house prices are stretched by affordability measures. ANZ expected limited growth in prices this year, followed by 4% in 2025 and 5% in 2026. Just being the devil's advocate for a moment, even those percentages on that $1.5 trillion will mean increasing wealth, I guess, for New Zealanders. But however, that might not be at the same rate as inflation. As I mentioned, inflation is below that at the moment, but you know, who knows where it will go. So that's a great attention-grabbing headline. There is always choppy waters in property and under the whims of governments bringing in extra costs or possibly the capital gains tax and those sorts of things over time. And so it's always interesting to see where things are going to go there. What's actually happening in the market, though? So this article by Brianna McIlraith on July the 9th says, House hunters in hibernation until conditions approve, QV data shows. So the average house price for the June 2024 quarter is in New Zealand is $916,000 or a little bit over of it. So the QV House Price Index showed home values decreased by an average of 0.9 nationally over the 3 months to the end of June 2024, a slightly larger rate of reduction than the 0.2 quarterly decline for May. However, at the $916,000, the figure is still 2.8% higher than last year and 13.9% lower than the market's peak in 2021. So Auckland has led the house value reductions with a 2.6% average home value decline in that quarter, down from a 1.4 decrease in QV's previous index, make it 5 straight months of negative growth. Then goes down and talks a little bit in this article about some other areas. Tauranga is minus 1.3%, Palmerston North minus 1.3%, Wellington 1.2%. So not too dramatic, but still reasonable. So where can you get the cheapest homes at the moment? It's Invercargill. Is in this article. It's full of loads of stats in there. But basically, there's not so many people looking to buy at the moment. Will that change as interest rates come down? Yes, it will. It always does. The articles I read earlier mentioned about that it will be a slow drop, which means the market will slowly increase. So let's take a moment to look at what mortgage advisors' top tips are for those preparing to buy a house. We'll move into that domain for people who are in that situation. So July the 14th, Joanna Davis on stuff.co.nz, I'll credit her, of course, for this article. She says, home ownership is a huge part of the Kiwi dream and first home buyers are still doing everything they can to make it happen. So we asked mortgage advisors for their top tips to facilitate the process. She's doing two articles. This is the first article. So she's speaking with Hannah McQueen from Enable Me, Andrew Malcolm from Mortgage HQ, and Linda Eagleton from Loan Market. Financial advisor and chartered accountant and founder of personal finance coaching firm Enable Me, Hannah McQueen's first piece of advice is to drop the dream of living in your first home and instead to consider what is sometimes called rent vesting. People sleepwalk into thinking that if I'm going to own a property, the first one should be the one I'm going to live in, she said. But the first question I work out is buying a house the right next step for this person, or should they buy an investment property instead of a home to live in? She says if mortgage payments are too high, it would be difficult to make financial progress. For about half of first home buyers, buying a home to live in materially disadvantages them, she says. You can normally live in a nicer house at a much cheaper rate if renting it than owning it. The difference can be as much as $20,000 a year in payments. We still want them to be on the property ladder, and with that $20,000, we're focused on getting a second property. It can maximise the pace of progress. The investment home doesn't need to be in the same town or city the buyer lives in, but factors that should be taken into account include the region's growth rate and that standalone properties, and those with three bedrooms, tend to gain in value more quickly. This, she is effectively saying, get started somewhere else and carry on renting. Financial conditions are tough right now. McQueen says people need to make a plan so they can feel hopeful. The reality is the current financial conditions are much harder than what they were. There's not much point in saying keep the faith. People need a pathway to get there based on what they've got to work with. And when people have a plan, she says, and willing to do just about anything financially, people will try harder, they'll sacrifice if it's worth their while, they'll ask for a raise, move in with the parents, buy with someone else, sell the car, delay the holiday. And why would you do all that unless you had to? On their own, these things are not enough to move the dial, but when combined with an effective strategy that brings it all together, it can be a tipping point. She actually recommends coaching for everything, and herself as a running coach, leadership coach, and financial coach. If you want better outcomes, you want accountability. For example, in sports, she says, a personal trainer will get more out of you than you can do on your own, and that's true even for athletes. When it comes to financial coaching and property advice, she says she is not only pushing her own barrel, she's referring to any coach they don't need they don't need to use me, but to ensure they're qualified and not biased towards a particular provider. Here's a tip from Andrew Malcolm, the co-founder of Mortgage HQ. He's got some unconventional tips. He said, avoid properties others want. So one piece of advice is to avoid properties that developers want, especially if you're buying in Auckland. Developers have deep pockets, he says, and you don't want to compete against them. First-time buyers should look at sections under 600 square metres and even consider buying property with a cross-lease title. Odds are it will be easier to buy, and if you can work in with other neighbour for the future and sell these properties together, you can have a windfall there. He's talking particularly, in the Auckland market. Other first-home buyers are also scared away. So Malcolm also recommends considering buying an apartment now that prices have flattened out a bit, particularly for those who have been frustrated by trying to buy and not getting anywhere. He says considering all the services, such as car park, pool and gym, the annual Bodycorp fee is not necessarily that expensive. Another option, he says, is to look at dual-key properties. Those that have two separate lockable entrances, allowing the homeowner to live in one part and rent out the other. Another piece of unconventional advice Malcolm offers is to consider buying properties that are for sale by auction. Get pre-approval and don't be scared to understand that you need what you need to do to make an unconditional pre-auction offer. Try to bring the auction forward. If fewer people see the property in a shortened marketing period, there will be less competition to buy. To be successful as a first home buyer, you've got to think like an investor. You've got to think like a developer and target properties that they're not interested in because they will go on to the next deal. So there's some tips there as well. When they talk to Linda Eagleton, she just reiterates what we've talked about in some of the other articles and says it's a buyer's market at the moment with an oversupply of houses. If you're confident with your job security, then if I could, she says, get a megaphone and stand high above New Zealand, she'd say, get in now, first home buyers. She believes the interest rates will fall over the next 2 years and property values will increase over the next 2 years. And I certainly agree with that. So she makes that point as well. So if you can get in, it's a good time to do so. We'll just move on now to another topic. And what we'll look at in particular here is an article from July the 16th. And of course, dramatic headlines are always interesting when it comes to the news. And this is a more localised one. It says, Palmer's North Real Estate Market in a Slump. This one by Janine Rankin from July 16th. She says, the real estate market in Palmer's North has tanked, with few buyers looking and sellers losing heart. The Real Estate Institute for New Zealand figures for June show just 77 houses were sold during the month, a figure Institute Ambassador Andy Stewart described as pretty low. Considering how many agents and listings are out there, it's hard times to get buyers ready to transact when there is no urgency for them to do anything. There were 418 properties currently being advertised. Stewart said some of the decrease in sales could also be attributed to the seasonal winter slump. That's something we've seen when you've been around in real estate for many years, as it's busier at certain times of year. Sales volumes had dropped from 121 in May, but were also well down on the 113 sales recorded in June last year, so it's dropped down to 77. Prices had remained stable at a median $635,000, similar to May, but still $105,000 below the median rateable value of $740,000. So remember, the rating values came out in Palmerston North around the time that the market was a lot busier. Stewart said it was tough for sellers to attract offers that met their expectations in what was clearly a buyer's market. If you don't really need to sell, why would you? He says. Sellers who wanted to sell were having to be realistic about pricing, and it was taking a median 51 days on the market for the properties to sell. Stewart said he believed the decline in the market had been influenced by the economic situation and difficulty in obtaining mortgage finance, worries about job security and people perceiving that interest rates were still high. The new regulatory changes, including debt-to-income ratios, loosened loan-to-value ratios, and a more relaxed bright-line test, and changes to interest rate deductibility have yet to impact the market. The only silver lining for people wanting to buy or sell was the stability of prices. In Fielding, there were 18 sales during the month, down from 30 the month before, from a choice of 126 properties currently on the market. The median sales price had dropped from 615 to 550. However, it's important to note that where there's less properties, those changes can be more dramatic. There were 23 house sales in Levin with a median house price of $510,000. They're also taking a little bit longer to sell in Levin at 69 days median. This article came out also in the last week on July 16th by Eloise Gibson on Stuff. It says, government considers rolling back insulation standards. Building and Housing Minister Chris Pink wants to roll back insulation standards that save a new home an estimated 40% on heating. Upgrades to insulation and glazing requirements in May 2023 were the first significant improvements to insulation standards in New Zealand in more than a decade. According to correspondence released to Radio New Zealand under the Official Information Act, government experts told Pink the old standards were significantly lower than other countries of similar climates, including relevant parts of Australia, the UK, Ireland and the US. They told him upgrades had overwhelming support from the public and the building sector when they were brought in, and they reduced heating requirements in a new four-bedroom home by up to 40%, and an estimated upfront cost increase of up to 2.8%. This did not persuade Pink, who told officials he'd heard from builders and developers in Tauranga and the rest of the Bay of Plenty that the standard, known as H1, added $40,000 to $50,000 to the cost of a new home and created overheating issues. Asked about wanting to roll back H1, Pink sent a statement to Radio New Zealand saying he had asked Ministry of Building Innovation and Employment to urgently investigate the cost of the changes. Builders frequently raise concerns with me over the new requirements within Clause H1 of the Building Code that they are saying adds tens of thousands of dollars onto the cost of a home. There are also frequent reports of moisture and overheating issues that are leading to increased energy usage, making the requirements counterproductive. And moisture is something I certainly see in my line of work on properties that are very well insulated but not ventilated very well, can certainly be a problem. Pink goes on to say, in the middle of a housing crisis, while Kiwis are still living in cars and emergency accommodation such as motels, it is critical that we don't create artificial barriers through well-intended but badly implemented policies. Radio New Zealand understands there were discussions with the industry about less drastic changes that might have addressed some of the issues builders were raising. It's not clear from the emails how those were resolved. So we'll just see how that goes. I think that government is trying to make the homes, more affordable is the goal there, by the sounds of things, with having that change there. So they're looking at rolling it back. It doesn't mean they actually are rolling it back, of course. So we'll just move on to this article, more about the landlords and tenants, by Debbie Jameson on July the 11th on Stuff. It says, Arrowtown landlords' first and last renting experience as UK high flyers leave debt. A Wellington woman's first experience as a landlord is likely to be her last after her Arrowtown tenants left with a $17,000 debt owing. Landlord Susie Bogner took to social media to locate former tenants Michael Pierce and Fiona Knapp this week, claiming they owed her thousands of dollars. Pierce leased the Bogner family's exclusive spare grass flat home for $2,000 a week, but failed to pay the rent past the first two rent payments. The Tenancy Tribunal terminated the lease in January, with Pierce ordered to pay a little under $17,000, and the majority of which being rent arrears. The couple, who recently returned to New Zealand after living in the United Kingdom, had paid a portion of the money, but Bogner was short about $12,000, she said. When approached on Wednesday at their new rental in Queenstown, Pierce and Knapp declined to comment. The new property in the upmarket Jacks Point subdivision was advertised for a weekly rent of $17.95 in April. Knapp posted a photo of family skiing at a nearby ski area on social media on Tuesday. Pierce told the Tenancy Tribunal that funds to pay the Speargrass flat rent were blocked as a result of the anti-money laundering regime in the UK, but did not offer evidence. The UK Insolvency Register separately lists Pierce and Knapp as being bankrupted from 2021 to 2029. They have backgrounds in clothing retail, investing in jewellery, and once described as a society power couple, living in properties such as a Grade 2 listed Notting Hill apartment in London and a Surrey mansion. Bogner said she felt she was conned by the couple. It's mainly disappointment. We had this high trust model and you don't expect people to not pay and basically ignore you and hope you go away. It's just bizarre, she said. She also felt she'd been naive, and I'll make a couple of comments soon on how she could have done things differently. The property was purchased by a family trust less than 2 years ago, and it was decided to rent it out for a few months over the summer as they weren't using it. They considered listing it on Airbnb, but thought a longer-term rental would help with Queenstown's accommodation shortage. I don't think we'll ever do it again. It was such a bad experience, she says. It's also important for prospective landlords to understand how difficult it was to enforce property rights. several weeks without rental payments passed before she was able to take the couple to tenancy tribunal, and even when the tenancy was terminated, there was no guarantee the couple and their family would leave the property. They did leave, but then the onus was on Bognor to track down the couple and seek the outstanding rent. Every now and then they promise to pay some money and then nothing happens, she says. The whole process takes so long, there's a bailiff involved now, but it's quite a long time since January the 26th. Ultimately, it was a moral issue, she said. It seems wrong for them to continue to rent other high-end Queenstown properties while trying to ignore an outstanding debt. So let's talk about some of the things that the landlord could have done differently there. Many landlords don't realise that there is low-cost specialist insurance that can cover anything that tenants do or don't do in a rental property. For example, not paying rent. You can insure against that. So the tenants owe, just to reiterate, just under $17,000. But that would be paid by an insurance company had the owner taken some insurance there. Did say that there were the majority of that amount was rent arrears. Makes me wonder what the other things were. But again, you can insure against things that tenants do at a property by and large outside of reasonable wear and tear. Many owners just have standard insurance. Standard rental insurance, but it can be not enough. Another thing, now that she has a ruling for that money, is that she doesn't have to chase that debt. She can just give that to a debt collection agency to do. They add on their costs, and the tenants have to pay that, and that would help to get the money back. So therefore, you're no longer worried about whether they say they will pay it back or not. You just lodge it with a debt collection agency, and let them do the work for you. So moving forwards, she's saying she's never going to rent it out again. But if you were looking at renting out a property, get good insurance, and then provided you do other things like reasonable background checks and check on the property every now and then, subject to that insurance company's particular policy needs, then you don't need to suffer like this. So it is sad to see somebody out of pocket for that amount of money, but it is absolutely avoidable when it comes to the insurance, subject probably to paying a small excess. So there we go. You've been listening to Greg Watson. It's lovely been having your company here on Property Matters, the show where we talk about all things property. And thank you to the producers at MPR, that's Manawatū People's Radio. You can find the show on mpr.nz. and just search Property Matters there. If you do want to find it as a podcast, it's available. Just search Greg Watson Property Matters. Probably throw a New Zealand in the search. And there we go. It'll be there to download and to get the show weekly. So thanks for listening, and we'll catch up again soon.
If you enjoy this MPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.